Hello, and welcome to the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. I'm your host, Benjamin Douglas, and this is the show where each week I read a chapter from a different indie author. Thanks for joining me for today's reading. Happy Friday, everybody, and welcome to the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. As always, I'm your host, Benjamin Douglas, bringing you another episode. Thanks for coming here today to be with me. This is episode number 20. 20. Yes. gosh, I remember my 20s. so near and yet so far. But here we are entering the third decade of life for the Book Speaks podcast. By decade, you're counting weeks. Oh, I'm getting too casual. You guys, you need to hold me accountable here. You know, today I'm sitting in my little office recording this episode, and I'm sipping a coffee. And I have to tell you, it's the most miraculous coffee I've ever tasted. Woke up with a bit of a headache this morning. I'd love to hear this week in the comments or on Twitter. I'm at Cantankerous Ben. I'd love to hear where you are and what you're doing when you listen to the show this week. Send me a tweet, leave me a comment on http://thebookspeakspodcast.wordpress.com. I'd love to hear pictures, even better. Show me what you're doing. Some of my favorite activities while I listen to podcasts: I'm washing the baby bottles, I'm loading the dishwasher, or I'm picking up sticks before I mow the lawn. all good escapes from non-podcast life, right? Today, I'm going to be reading from indie author Jonathan Paul Isaacs. And this is the third week in a row that I will have read from a World War II historical fiction novel. I want to point that out and remind everyone that this was especially timed because of the release of the Christopher Nolan-directed film Dunkirk, which I still haven't seen. Looks fabulous. And I was invited to participate with the podcast in a multi-author promotion, which took place last week. Sadly, that promotion is now over. The epic Dunkirk Week World War II book promotion, where a whole mess of historical fiction books were marked down to 99 cents. But if you are interested in World War II historical fiction at all, and you didn't catch the last two episodes, you know what? Go back, give those a listen. You're going to discover some new authors. And there's a Facebook group for this, the Second World War Facebook group. I mentioned it, I think, two episodes ago. Go check that out. You might find even more. That's where the promotion was organized in the first place. All right, but on to Mr. Jonathan Paul Isaacs. I'm going to begin, as I always do, by reading his Amazon author bio. Jonathan Isaacs never thought he'd be a writer. In college, he studied to be an engineer, but after years of his wife telling the screaming children to use their words, which comes naturally to neither toddlers nor engineers, he too decided to give it a go. Now, what he says even occasionally makes sense. Isaacs now works as a technology executive in Texas, where his hobbies include poking fun at other technology executives. Very good. Very nice, Jonathan. Brevity is the secret to great communication, yes? excellent, excellent Amazon author bio. Another tech guy. Woo! I gotta say, there's been a slew of tech people coming onto the scene and doing really well. Of course, early on in the show, I do a little discussion where I talk about Michael Anderle and Chris Fox as two guys out of the tech sector. Jonathan Paul Isaacs, a technology executive. That's it's a heck of a job title. I confess I don't know what it means precisely, other than that you are an executive in some technology field. But good on you for taking some time out of what I'm sure is a busy schedule as a father and an executive to write books. He has a couple of titles up on Amazon, including The Hazards of War, from which we'll be reading today, Armchair Safari, and The House That Jack Built, a humorous haunted house fiasco. So he's straddling some genres here. It's not all World War II historical fiction. And when I contacted Jonathan, we spoke briefly via email. He let me know, too, that he's got some military science fiction coming up. So sort of like myself, I feel like, yeah, let's catch that train, which has probably already left the station. But best of luck to you, Jonathan, with your mill science fiction. I hope that goes really, really well. Obviously, he has a handle after reading some Hazards of War here on military. So, you know, the next leap is difficult for anyone to make because it's not like we've, you know, been out on a spaceship. You know, last week I read the book description, the blurb, the Amazon book description, and I kind of like that. So I think I'm going to continue in that vein for a while. So before we get into the reading, I'm also going to read Jonathan's book description for The Hazards of War. A remote winery, a dead German, a lethal secret. The year is 1942. Hitler's war machine has decimated the Allies and thrown the British back across the Channel. With their prospects of freedom dwindling by the day, the people of Europe are learning the terror of living under the Third Reich. For Gabrielle Conti, a young French girl working at her family's winery, it all seemed so distant and surreal. Surely such events couldn't impact her simple life in the French countryside. That was before the body of an SS officer was found in the basement. When her family becomes the subject of a brutal murder investigation, Gabrielle must match wits with the SS captain Hans Tiedemann, a veteran of the Russian front, who is hell-bent on singling out the killer. Gabrielle hopes if she can fool Tiedemann into thinking he is making progress, she might just buy enough time for her family to escape. But that will be no easy task, for as the Germans gather their clues, Gabrielle starts to learn more about her family's true involvement in the war, and saving them could spell the end of the French resistance. The Hazards of War is a suspenseful historical thriller set against the darkest times of World War II. Plunge into the chaos of a mysterious murder, ruthless Nazi soldiers, an accused spy, and a young girl who will do anything she can to save her family. An exciting war novel blended with elements of detective fiction, says the Manhattan Book Review. Pick up The Hazards of War to start the suspense today. All right, so that's the blurb. And I'm awfully glad I read that out loud because it gives you a lot more context. This first chapter, which I'll read today, is actually not from Gabrielle, the French girl's perspective. It's from the German perspective. It's from the Nazis. So, really interesting beginning, I thought, to this novel. It's the first thing that I have read in the 3 weeks we've done World War II readings that's from a German perspective, although clearly the bulk of the novel is not. Do come back next week. With any luck, if everything goes well this weekend, I'm going to have another interview, this time with author Boyd Craven III, who writes primarily post-apocalyptic and survivalist stuff. So hopping off the historical fiction train and going to have a lot of fun with an interview if all the tech goes well. And even if it doesn't, we're going to do the reading. So come back and check that out next week. It's going to be a lot of fun. I want to remind everyone before we do the reading, this reading is done with the author's permission for the purpose of this podcast. I'm not charging you any money to listen to it. And the author retains all rights except for my right to include this in the podcast. All that good legal stuff. And I hear my baby has woken from his nap. So I'm going to wrap up my fast talking and let you get on to enjoying today's reading. Thanks, everybody. See you again next week. The Hazards of War by Jonathan Paul Isaacs. Chapter 1. Soldiers at war often fight the weather as much as the enemy. Today, the weather was winning. Captain Hans Tiedemann of the Waffen-SS stood in the frigid rain and watched his men try, and fail, to get their truck free. It was a hopeless affair. Each time the Opel seemed like it was about to regain enough traction to move back onto the unpaved road, the tires would invariably slip at the last moment, become stuck once again in the quagmire. The soldiers, their camouflage smocks shrugging off lines of water, would bow their heads in frustration and trudge over to try once again. All Tiedemann could do was follow attempt after vain attempt. They were going to be here forever.
Herr Hauptsturmführer?
Tiedemann turned and struggled briefly for the name of the lieutenant next to him. Kraus, he thought. Too many people in his compagnie were new, with too little time for them to regroup in southern France. That's what happened when battle groups returned from Russia. Decimation. Scores of replacements. It would take time to learn all of their names. Or maybe Tiedemann shouldn't bother, and it would be easier to forget them when they died. Kraus was on the short side, a narrow mustache underneath his angular nose and glasses. He was shielding a partially folded map from the rain with the side of his coat. Tiedemann could barely recognize their location through the failing light. Heavy lines from Luxembourg to Avignon represented the roads on which they were supposed to be, but where Kraus was pointing was in the middle of a blank space, devoid of any signs of civilization.
"I think we're here, sir," he said as he fingered the map. 70, maybe 75 kilometers south of Dijon, heading south. I don't know where we got off the main road. No one saw any signs that indicated a wrong turn."
"Who was navigating?" Tiedemann asked. Kraus paused for a moment.
"I was, Herr Hauptsturmführer."
Nodding to himself, Tiedemann filed that little tidbit away for later. Kraus came from the general staff. While Tiedemann was sure the mousy little man was bright, field navigation would be an area for improvement. Damn it. Too many replacements. Chewing out an officer in a cold November rainstorm wasn't going to help matters. Tiedemann instead wanted to know what could be done to fix their current mess. They had a schedule to keep. As if reading his thoughts, or perhaps atoning for his sin of poor geography, Kraus offered a possible solution.
"Sir, according to my notes, there's a French manor house about a kilometer further down this road. Domaine de Conti, a small vineyard. If you would be inclined to stop for the night, we could take shelter there and wait out the rest of the storm."
"We're supposed to be in Perpignan the day after tomorrow," Tiedemann replied. "The Americans are in North Africa as we speak. And if they mean to invade southern France, they will not wait on us because you got us lost. We still have some daylight left, even with this blackened sky. I intend to make use of it."
No sooner had the words left his mouth than their problematic opal lurched forward, showering the soldiers around it with a great splattering of mud. From there, the truck quickly fishtailed out of control and slid off the opposite side of the road. Men picked themselves up out of the filth, and even through the heavy rain, Tiedemann could see on their faces that the outlook was grim. The truck had overturned into a gully alongside the road. It wasn't going anywhere tonight. Scheiße. Tiedemann glanced over at Kraus, and their eyes met. There was a moment of silence. Then, without a word, both men looked down in unison at the map. The house was a large structure that sat on top of a hill and jutted up almost imperceptibly against an angry sky. Tiedemann led a small group of men up a winding path with another lieutenant, named Heinrich Springer, close at his side. He didn't know much about Springer either, except that he had been in the Hitler Youth and spoke French, and that was enough for the moment. The rest of the men stayed to secure their vehicles roadside for the night. The stone path was treacherous and kept them exposed to the stinging rain. They were in a fine mood by the time they reached the double doors. Springer pounded loudly on the wood with his fist.
Attention! Nous sommes les soldats allemands. Nous vous commandons ouvrir les portes au nom du Führer.
There was no response. Springer repeated his command to open the door, then grabbed a Mauser rifle from one of his men and punctuated his order with several strokes against the wood. Gradually, faint scrapes and scuffles could be heard from the other side. A few moments later, and a door opened to reveal a blonde, middle-aged woman holding a short candle. She was clearly dressed for bed.
Qui est-ce de là?
Stand de côte au nom de Führer,
shouted Springer.
C'est qui?
The woman was blocking any passage to the warmth inside.
Etape de côte, maintenant!
Springer shoved the Mauser at her to leave no mistake about whether or not they were coming in.
Mouvement? Ah! Ah non! Robert! Robert!
The indignation on the woman's face was plain as day, but a soaking Tiedemann didn't care. The people of a conquered land were subject to the will of the conqueror. Passing troops often required food and shelter, and most of the French north of the demarcation line cooperated begrudgingly. However, down here in Vichy France, which was presumably still independent, the Germans would have to be a little more forceful. Not that they wouldn't treat everyone decently. France was a cultured country. The Russians received quite a different handling. The SS troops forced their way into the house. Tiedemann stood in the rear, edging out of the rain as best he could, until he was sure his men had secured the area. The doors opened up into a large foyer that revealed corridors on the left and right, with limestone flagstones underfoot that darkened with the water the men brought in. On the grand staircase that faced them, a Frenchman in his late 40s was rapidly descending the steps, with his palms forward to show he was unarmed. The woman who had answered the door was clearly yelling at him to do something, evident to the Germans in spite of the language barrier.
"Gentlemen, is there something we can do for you?"
the Frenchman asked in workable German.
"We require shelter for the night,"
Springer announced with all the authority of the Reich.
"You will provide for our men until the storm ends and the road becomes serviceable. Your treatment will be fair if you follow instructions properly and don't force us to throw you out."
"Of course, of course," the man answered in a stammering voice. The horrified reluctance was as plain as day on his face, though he quickly regained his composure.
"The six of you are welcome in our home. We are more than happy to greet travelers with a spare bed."
Springer interrupted him.
"Six? We have closer to 20. Officers will be taking over the bedrooms and furniture as required. You and your family may displace to another part of the house as long as you don't cause trouble."
The Frenchman turned white. The wife saw his reaction and started jabbering at him in incomprehensible bursts. The Frenchman answered in kind, and whatever he said made the woman even more agitated than when she had opened the door to a group of armed men. Springer tried to bark instructions, but found himself increasingly ignored as the domestic argument spiraled out of control. The lieutenant's face began to turn red, and he reached for the Mauser he had used on the door. Tiedemann saw what was about to happen and decided it was time he brought their introduction to a close. He stepped through the gauntlet formed by his men and approached the Frenchman.
"What is your name?"
Silence descended upon the room, save for the pounding of raindrops outside the French doors.
"Conti, monsieur," said the Frenchman. "Robert Conti."
Tiedemann studied the man for a moment. He was short, well-groomed, and clean-shaven. Still quite pale, the brown hair slicked across his head covered a touch of baldness, and his clothes were well-tailored with the vague smell of cigarette smoke. Judging by the appearance of the man and his home, it wasn't much of a leap to guess that Conti and his family must have lived well and enjoyed their wealth before the war.
"You say your name is Robert Conti?"
Tiedemann asked politely.
"Yes, monsieur."
"You are the Robert Conti of the winery, Domaine de Conti?"
"Yes, monsieur."
"Ah, I thought so," Tiedemann said, smiling. "An excellent vineyard. I especially liked your, what was it? Cadio, 1934. I used to have several bottles, that is, before the war started."
"What an outstanding stroke of luck for us to have happened upon your manor."
"Merci. We have tried to work very hard in making the best wine possible."
"And you have succeeded, very much so."
Tiedemann took a dramatically deep breath.
"Monsieur Conti, my men have their own equipment, bedrolls, and provisions. All they need is a roof over their head out of this dreadfully cold rain. Perhaps, if you thought it fitting, they could simply sleep on the floor."
Conti seemed to regain some of his color at this concession, and was now merely off-pale.
"Of course, monsieur. If that would be all they need, we could certainly accommodate you. The ground floor would probably work well. That is, I think there would be room for that many men.
Oh, I'm sure it will be fine. As far as my officers and I are concerned, however, we would hope for more comfortable accommodations, if that could be arranged, of course.
Tiedemann looked directly into Conti's eyes. We wouldn't want anyone to have to sleep outside in this awful weather. The Frenchman started nodding slowly, glancing over at his wife before looking back at Tiedemann. The threat was not lost on him.
Yes, yes, we have a few rooms upstairs that would work well, if there aren't too many of you. My wife could bring you some linens, if you like.
That would be splendid. Please ask her if she would do so. Tiedemann stretched out his arm towards where the woman stood at his left, prompting Conti to begin making the necessary arrangements. Tiedemann walked back to the open doorway. He could see Obersturmführer Eppler, another one of his lieutenants, leading the rest of the platoon up the path towards him. That was good. But when he turned around, it was obvious that Springer was seething. He looked like a dog that had just been yanked back on his leash by its owner. Conti's wife had already left the room, and Conti himself was calling up the staircase for either servants or more family members to assist. Tiedemann pulled Springer over for a private conversation.
Speak, Lieutenant.
Sir, Springer gushed, why don't we just throw them out?
Because it's not necessary, Tiedemann said in a private, parental tone. As you can see, even in war, a certain level of politeness can work wonders. While the French are a conquered people, sometimes they forget. That doesn't mean we don't remind them, but there are better times than when we're dripping wet and about to collapse from fatigue.
Jawohl, Herr Hauptsturmführer.
Please continue in assisting our gracious host with his preparations by securing the rest of the manor, politely. Tiedemann caught Springer's eye to make sure he understood. Many of his men were hardened warriors, having fought through the horrors of the Russian front, where neither side gave any quarter. Unless they were told otherwise, polite might simply mean a bullet in the head instead of the stomach.
Jawohl!
Springer yelled again, and immediately began to organize groups of soldiers to search the house. Tiedemann stood aside to let his men filter in. Their appearance was awful, covered in mud and misery. A night of sleeping indoors was well deserved. They would need it before going back into battle. And all of it had been arranged without a struggle, using a few simple lies. Tiedemann smiled darkly. While he fancied a quality glass here and there, he had never heard of Conti wines before. If Kraus hadn't briefed him in the car on the way over, it might have taken force to get a roof over their heads after all. Then they would not have had anyone to play servant during their stay.
This concludes another episode of the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. Thanks for joining me, your host, Benjamin Douglas, for another indie author reading. If you liked what you heard, be sure to visit http://thebookspeakspodcast.wordpress.com for more episodes and for links to the author's website and the author's Amazon author page in the show notes. If you'd like to follow me on my own author journey, you can find me at http://benjamindouglasbooks.wordpress.com. And of course, if you're an indie author interested in having your work featured on the show, or if you're interested in discussing having your book read and produced by me as an audiobook, feel free to contact me at benjamindouglasbooks@gmail.com. Thanks for joining me today. I hope you have a productive and enjoyable weekend.